Chapter 18. Hot Pursuit. Marge's golf cart was parked right outside the Polar Pavilion, next to an overturned trash can that she had apparently run into while parking it. A disgruntled janitor was scooping all the scattered trash into a plastic bag. Marge slid into the driver's seat. Since she took up the whole thing, Summer and I had to jump into the back seat. It was probably better that way, though. Neither of us wanted to be pressed up against Marge, who now stank of fish guts in addition to her usual funk. Not that I smelled much better myself. Plus, my clothes were still partially frozen, while my shoes squelched wetly on my feet. Normally, I might have left Marge to take up the chase herself, not wanting to end up in more danger. But Marge needed the extra eyes to keep a lookout for James Van Amberg in the crowds. And frankly, I wanted to make sure the guy paid the price for pitching me into the polar bear moat. "There he is!" I shouted, pointing. In the distance, James Van Amberg was racing through the crowded concourse, heading toward the park exit. Marge punched the accelerator. The golf cart took off with surprising speed, nearly flattening the janitor, who had to leap out of the way. He dropped the bag of trash he'd collected, and Marge promptly ran right over it, scattering all the garbage once again. The janitor shouted something at us that the Fun Jungle employee handbook expressly forbade employees to say in front of the guests. To pursue James, we had to cut directly across Adventure Road, the main route around the park. It was wall-to-wall tourists, but that didn't slow Marge for an instant. She just plowed straight ahead and let everyone else fend for themselves. Tourists scattered, screaming, as the cart bore down on them. They scrambled onto benches, dove into the landscaping, and shimmied up trees. And Marge yelled at all of them like somehow they were at fault.
"Watch out!" she bellowed. "This is an emergency! Fun Jungle Security, coming through!"
Luckily, James Van Amberg was easy to keep an eye on. His big size now worked against him. He stuck out above the crowds, and his bald head shone brightly in the hot sun. Plus, as a big man, he wasn't that fast. We were gaining ground on him, thanks in part to Marge's staunch refusal to go around any obstacles. Instead, she made a beeline for our target, not caring what was in the way. We clipped two more garbage cans, toppling them and scattering their contents. We plowed through a decorative flower bed, steamrolling the tulips. And we caromed off a popcorn cart, which promptly rolled down a hill, upended over a railing, and tumbled into the camel exhibit. As if there wasn't enough commotion already, every wild bird in the area immediately sensed there was free popcorn around and homed in on it. Clouds of pigeons made a beeline for the camels, along with a few stray seagulls and peacocks. Any unfortunate guests caught in their path were strafed with bird poop. Through all of this, Summer and I clung onto the golf cart for dear life. Several times we were almost pitched out of our seats. In the oppressive heat, my frozen clothes were defrosting quickly, creating rivulets of water that trickled down my body. It occurred to me that there was something I still needed to say to Marge. "Thanks for saving me."
"I was just doing my job,"
Marge replied gruffly, then yelled at a Japanese family,
"Get out of my way, morons!"
The family bolted so quickly, their Li Ping ears fell off. Marge drove right over the souvenirs, crushing them into pulp. "It was still dangerous," I said, hanging on as we jumped a curb into a topiary garden.
"When you're in security, it's your sworn duty to serve and protect."
Marge smashed through the plants, reducing a few topiary warthogs to twigs. Summer and I shared a concerned look. Marge seemed surprisingly blasé about the whole rescue. Either she was in shock, or despite working at Fun Jungle, she'd never bothered to learn anything about polar bears. I figured it was probably the latter, but I wasn't quite sure. We hurtled onward through the garden, guillotining a topiary rhino, then roared back out onto the concourse, leaving a trail of shredded bushes in our wake. Marge snapped her radio out of her holster and sent out a broadcast.
"This is Officer O'Malley. I am in hot pursuit of a suspect in the Li Ping kidnapping, currently heading toward the front gates by way of Hippo River, requesting backup immediately."
"Marge?" Honecker asked over the radio, sounding worried. "Did you say hot pursuit?"
"Yes, sir. I have spotted James Van Amberg and am running him down."
The golf cart is not intended for high-speed chases, Honecker warned, especially inside the park.
I won't have to chase him much longer if I get my backup, Marge replied. Now, I need a barricade erected across the front gates with a whole mess of armed guards to prevent the suspect from leaving the property. Whoa!
As the crowd scattered in front of us, a small child had been left behind. Marge veered wildly to avoid him, losing her grip on her radio, which flew from her hand and sailed into a lemur exhibit.
Crud, Marge exclaimed, then yelled back at the toddler. You owe me a radio, you lousy rugrat.
Ahead of us, James Van Amburgh raced past Malumbo Point and disappeared behind the waterfalls of Hippo River. Over the sound of all the angry tourists screaming at Marge for driving like a maniac, I heard music, festive dance music. I looked through the trees in the direction of the front gates and saw something very large moving behind them. Marge? I said.
Not now, Marge snapped, swerving through a horde of guests. I need to concentrate.
But, Marge...
Shut your trap, Teddy.
Marge, there's a parade ahead. For the spring, J.J. McCracken had decided to institute a parade at Fun Jungle every afternoon.
Everyone loves parades, he'd claimed. Disney World must have 17 a day.
This was a massive exaggeration, but when J.J. wanted something done, it got done. And so, the Fun Jungle Friends Dance and Sing Parade was born. The annual San Antonio Battle of Flowers Parade had recently taken place, and afterward, J.J. had snapped up several used floats for a bargain. They had originally been covered with live flowers, but the special events and entertainment department had swapped those out for plastic ones, then slightly modified the themes to be more relevant to a zoo. The local Elks Club's Remember the Alamo float had become, with a slight bit of modification, Remember the Armadillo. Then some attractive girls and guys were hired to wear skimpy clothes and dance on the floats, while all the Fun Jungle mascots were ordered to abandon their usual posts and join the festivities. The route began near the front gates, where it would draw the most attention, then loop the park on Adventure Road. It wasn't a very impressive parade, but the tourists seemed to appreciate it, and on occasion, Fun Jungle would spice it up a bit by inviting a local high school marching band to play. According to JJ, the great thing about high school bands was that you didn't have to pay them. They would happily perform in return for free Fun Jungle tickets. A marching band was playing that day. I heard them before I saw them. Being a typical bunch of high school musicians, they were butchering whatever song they were performing so that it was completely unrecognizable. But they had drawn a good-sized crowd nonetheless. It was probably mostly their families, but since a standard school band had over 100 kids in it, that was still a lot of parents and siblings. We zoomed around Hippo River to find our path blocked by a sea of people. They were lined up 3 deep on both sides of Adventure Road while the parade passed between them. Ahead of us, James Van Amburgh was rudely shoving his way through the crowd. He knocked 2 little kids on their butts, then ducked between the marching band and the Hooray for Hippos float. Marge yelped and stomped on the brakes. We skidded wildly, but there wasn't room to stop. Rather than mow down some innocent parade-goers, Marge swerved into the landscaping. Unfortunately, the particular spot she chose had a small hill in it, which was perfectly sloped to form a ramp.
"Bail out!" I yelled to Summer, although she had already realized this was the smart thing to do.
Marge didn't. As the cart crashed through the small barrier hedge, Summer and I both leaped off. We landed on the grassy hill and tumbled down it, while Marge and the cart rocketed off the top.
"Look out!"
Marge howled to the crowd ahead. Thankfully, her voice was loud enough to overwhelm even the marching band. The tourists scrambled out of her path just in time. The cart crashed to earth and skidded into the middle of the parade. The band's song ended abruptly in a blare of frightened trumpet blasts as the musicians scattered. Marge sluiced through them and slammed into the Salute to Marsupials float head-on. The float stopped so abruptly that all the dancers and mascots were thrown off their feet. While most collapsed into a pile on the float itself, the poor actor playing Kazoo the Koala sailed through the air and landed atop the roof of Marge's golf cart with such force that the head came off his costume. Dozens of children shrieked in horror as their favorite koala was decapitated right in front of them. The enormous disembodied head then rolled through the marching band like a bowling ball, knocking over the trombone section like tenpins. I scrambled to the top of the hill, spitting out grass, to see that James Van Amburgh had made it through the parade route and was well on his way to the front gates. Some Fun Jungle security guards were racing into the entry plaza and probably could have stopped him, but they were too distracted by the chaos Marge had caused. They ran toward us, rather than James, allowing him to slip right past them. Summer and I both shouted to the guards that they needed to turn around because a major criminal was getting away, but they couldn't hear us over the cacophony of startled guests and screaming children. Marge did her best to take up the chase, throwing the golf cart into reverse, despite the fact that there was a beheaded koala clinging to the roof. I recognized the unfortunate soul as Charlie Connor, an actor who'd had his share of mishaps at Fun Jungle before. Charlie held on tightly to the roof, white-knuckled in fear, screaming various curses in front of the crowd as Marge raced backward through the madness. Sadly, Marge was even worse at driving in reverse than she was at going forward. She swerved to avoid a toppled saxophonist, slewed off Adventure Road, and smashed through the fence into the flamingo pond. The cart stopped abruptly, axle-deep in flamingo muck, while poor Charlie went flying. If it hadn't been traumatic enough to see Kazoo lose his head, the children now all got to see him splat into some of the most foul, bird-poop-laden water in the park. The flamingos promptly fled through the hole in the fence, amping up the chaos along the parade route even more. They'd all had their wings clipped, so they couldn't fly away, but that didn't stop them from flapping their limbs wildly in the hopes that they might suddenly take off. Summer and I raced across the parade route, pursuing James, but he was already on his way out the gates. He paused and looked back for a moment, flashing us a cruel grin, then slipped out into the parking lot. Most of the Fun Jungle security guards who had arrived were tending to the crowd, making sure that no one was hurt. Thankfully, no one appeared to be, save for a few scrapes and bruises, although a few were trying to round up renegade flamingos. I spotted Honecker as he arrived on the scene. He planted himself in front of Marge's golf cart before she could drive out of the flamingo pond and do any more damage. I ran over to Honecker, intending to alert him about James Van Amburgh's escape.
"Teddy," he growled, "I should have known you'd be involved in this."
"I'm sorry," I said, "but it's an emergency."
"No emergency is worth causing this."
Honecker waved to the crowd of angry tourists, upended performers, and escaped flamingos. He was livid. His face as red as a scarlet macaw.
"Do you realize how much trouble you've caused here?"
I glanced back toward the front gates, but James Van Amburgh had vanished from sight. I started to make one last plea to go after the man who'd nearly killed me, but before I could, Marge laid on her horn.
"Move it, Chief," she yelled. "I have a criminal to catch."
She stomped on the accelerator, but instead of moving forward, her wheels just spun idly in the pond, showering poor Charlie Connor with more flamingo muck. Honecker didn't budge. Instead, he stared bullets at Marge and replied,
"Your days of pursuing criminals here are through, O'Malley. You're fired."